Girls and math. Yeah, a really complex issue, and something that parents and caregivers are thinking about a lot. Today we have a guest who is a State Teacher of the Year and a math teacher of over 15 years. She helps us dig into the importance of role models with our young girls, how language can impact a child's math identity, and how we as parents can implicitly and unknowingly impact our daughters' math identities. Luckily, she also has some great suggestions for how to help our daughters build a positive relationship with math and how we can create stronger math identities with our young girls. Welcome to The Core, and today we're going to be digging into math. Let's go nerd out. Hello and welcome to The Core. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Allen, the owner-operator of The Community Classroom, a tutoring and academic coaching center in Florence, Massachusetts that serves students in Western Massachusetts and nationwide. I'm also the 2010 Florida Teacher of the Year, an education nerd, the stepmom to four teens and mama of one toddler, a runner, a lover of dad jokes, and an educator for almost 20 years. In this podcast, we will answer parent questions about education and learning. Welcome to The Core. All right. Hello and welcome to The Core. I'm so excited to introduce our guest expert today. She is a mama to two young women. She is the 2013 Department of Defense an Education Activity Teacher of the Year. She is a math guru. She is an amazing educator. And she also, I should say, I have the pleasure of working with her because she is one of the teachers who tutors at the community classroom. So welcome, Danielle.
Thank you so much. It's such a mouthful when you start to say the whole Department of Defense Education Activity. It sounds so official.
Right. So official. I'm feeling, did I get it right?
You did. You so got it right.
Check. So Danielle, today is a question we got from the caregivers and parents of an eighth grade client, female client, but they want to know what's happening with my daughter who all of a sudden does not like math. So big hairy question out there. So first of all, Danielle, what's your take on this and why is this question important to you?
Well, wow. It's important to me because I was one of those kids that loved math, and I was a girl. And in all of my years going through elementary, junior high, and into high school, I was surrounded by a classroom full of boys. And I always felt like, what's wrong with me? But I just really like this, and who cares what they think? And most of my math teachers until I got to high school were men. And so I had two wonderful female math teachers in high school that really helped guide me and mentor me. And actually, that's who inspired me to become a high school math teacher. And so now I want to pay it forward, for lack of a better way to say that, to other young ladies out there who want to go into the field that involves math or science, any of those places where maybe there's a stereotype or a stigma against them being in that field.
All right. There's a lot to unpack there, Danielle. So one, this idea of you had a few female teachers that were role models to you, which I think, you know, there's a lot there to identity and math and who we see ourselves being or not being in the future. Two, who was in those classes, right? Yeah. You were one girl among many boys. And three, it sounds like you've always had a positive relationship with math.
Yeah. And I would say that positive relationship with math, I will attribute that to my grandfather and my father, my grandfather was a banker. And I remember being so excited as a kid going into the bank with him. I mean, now I can't even tell you the last time I've been into a bank because of all the online banking, but going in there and seeing the little tickets and the big vault where they had the money.
Oh,
and
so just, cool.
Right? Like, I mean, it's like one of those nostalgic, like, smells too. Now that building, when I go back home, is, I don't even know what it is. I don't even know if it's still there, but, just being able to kind of like see that in real life, see that, oh, he's using math all the time. Same with my dad. I used to sit next to him while he was, you know, like paying our bills. And I remember him writing out those checks, which is so hilarious because I teach financial algebra now. And I don't even teach kids how to write checks because I'm like, go ask your parents. Right, exactly. What's a check? Like, ask your parents to show you a check because, like, I don't even know the last time I've handwritten a check. You know, Venmo, Cash App. There should be a lesson about that. Maybe I should create a lesson. I think
there you go.
Yeah.
So what a great story that you have from your childhood about having this experience with your grandfather, this positive experience around math. Yeah. I can remember for myself, I had a pretty good relationship with math. Again, usually like one or two girls in a class full of boys. Then I can remember 10th grade, I think it was algebra honors. I was in danger of making not my first A, so I was possibly going to get a B. And it was this huge kind of chink in my confidence where I was like, ooh, maybe I'm not as good at math as I thought. Still went to college for engineering because I had this idea that I was really good at math and science. And then I took my first math class in college and got my very first C of my life. And I was like, oh, not good at math. Like, that's it, changing my majors. That was kind of like where I lost my, or I should say not lost, because it's, I've reconnected with math since. We had a brief separation, but now we're back together. What do you think happens to other young girls that causes them to not like math?
Right. Well, and just like the question that you asked in the beginning with this parent of an eighth grader, and I will say, like, those middle school years, I've had the wonderful opportunity to tutor through the community classroom, a wonderful middle schooler, but also teach some middle school classes in Dodea. And there is something that happens in those middle school years. And for some, it'll happen later, but it takes one moment. It takes one test grade. It takes one time that that teacher has used a tone. You know, that tone of like, how do you not know how to do this? And I love teaching. I've been teaching for 16 years. And sometimes as math teachers, we make so many assumptions about the things that students should have learned. You should have learned this in the fifth grade. You should have learned this back in sixth grade. You should have known how to do these fractions. I do think that we as math teachers do make a lot of assumptions about what kids should know. I hear all the time from my colleagues, well, they should have learned that in the sixth grade. They should have learned that in their Algebra 1 class. And I think to myself, but they didn't. So what are we going to do? How are we going to support these students? And for young women, young ladies, girls, there's a lot that happens to them in middle school.
Right.
Right.
Like, lots going on. Those are really tough years.
Oh, it's so tough. And so if there's just one negative little moment, I mean, it can sting like no other bee sting ever. And then maybe you're lucky enough to get a you know, very caring and supportive teacher later on that can help you overcome that. But I still see the higher the level of math, fewer women are teaching it. You know, so when we get to the AP calculus and the AP stats and that, it's hit or miss anymore. I think it's more women are going into teaching those fields because they do want to change the stigma. Mm-hmm. However, we're still in that transition. Like, things are still consistently evolving. So
it's like a chicken or egg problem, right? Because What the research shows is that young girls feel good about math and feel good about themselves mm-hmm. and have a good kind of mathematical identity and self-image. But then by high school, that starts to wane. And then yep. they're less likely to go into a major in college that has to do with science or math. And then they're less likely to have a career. And then we don't have those teachers who have a strong math background and math confidence who are role models for our young girls. Mm-hmm. Okay, so chicken or egg problem. I need some hope here. So as a parent, like, what can we do?
You know, I think one of the best things, and I say this as being a parent, and when I work with my students in my classrooms, and especially with the young females, the young ladies that tell me, you know, I'm just not good at math. Like, it breaks my heart. And at the same time, I'm like, challenge accepted.
Right.
I am going to convince you. And to me, convincing children, no matter who they are and where they come from, that math is about thinking and not doing mm-hmm. is the most important thing for me to be able to teach them throughout my class. The Pythagorean theorem and all that graphing and all that. Yeah. Like, get it. That's going to happen. But that competence to know that math is a process of thinking is the most important thing. And it's that encouragement. It's not about perfection. It's not about getting the right answer. Although that feels good. It feels good to get the right answer. But when we start to think about math outside of sixth grade, seventh grade, outside of that classroom setting, it's really about that trial and error and process. And it becomes, I think, more scientific of like, I think this mm-hmm. is how it's going to work. And it's like building a bookshelf. Like, we have all these pieces. Am I going to do it in the right order? And am I going to have 10 screws left at the end? You know, is right. it going to work or not? And so I think for parents, really encourage in those questions of like, what did you think was going to work for you? And why do you not think that worked? How did you feel during taking that test? And if they get something wrong, like, it's okay. Fail, first attempt in learning. Like, math is about learning and thinking, not just doing. And so get them out there, build things with them, make them calculate the tip. If you're out in a restaurant, ask them, what would it have cost had this, if you're out shopping, had this not been 25% off? What if they would have marked it buy one, get three, you know, 50% off? I think just to kind of normalize those conversations of math. And I'm going to say something to all the moms out there. Like, this is for all the moms. Whatever your experience was with math, don't put that on your child.
Right.
And it's so hard. And I get a lot of moms that say, like, I hated math.
Right.
Like, I know you did. And I'm so sorry, but your child doesn't. Your child really wants to do well in math. And sometimes we tell stories that then they take on. And it's not a criticism to any of the moms out there. I feel you. I wish I would have been able to be your teacher. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, we can't put that on our kids. And I think the younger you start to have them just count, build, Jenga is like the best thing. Legos for little ones.
Yes.
Like, I'm that annoying person who gives those types of things to little kids when they're, you know, for their first birthday, second birthday, third birthday.
Like, bring it.
Right? You're not getting no stuffed animals from me. So card games are the best thing for kids. And I know sometimes it can be like, oh gosh, you know, I'm busy. I've got things to do. Have them cook with you. Tell them to double the recipe.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of things are so relevant. And, you know, one of the things I hear all the time, especially now that I teach financial algebra, which is like the best class ever, is, you know, math all of a sudden, like, it makes sense to me because it's stuff I'm going to use in the real world. And that's
making those connections.
Yep.
Making those connections, keeping it relevant, keeping it fun.
Yep.
I think
so fun.
Right. One thing we don't want parents to do is like print a 10-page document full of worksheets and problems. And, you know, like that can sometimes, some kids love that. Like, yeah. I was that kid that kind of, I liked doing the worksheets, but I would say the majority of kids, there's other opportunities to engage kids with math that are more relevant and fun ways that are joyful and give kids really great experiences where they can have, you know, begin to form a really positive math identity. And yep. Danielle, you're right. Like starting at one,
yep.
I think about my daughter who's two. And we love playing with like her stacking blocks and counting them while we stack them and then knock them down and seeing how many are left in the pile. We love looking at different shapes and sorting. Sorting is such a great skill for early math, like putting things into groups different ways. And kids have so much fun with that. And also it can be really helpful for getting kids to clean up. Mama score.
Yes.
Pro tip.
Right? Right? Win-win for everybody. You know, one of the other things that I love for young kids to do, or even older kids, because a lot of times we lose that like number sense. We talk about that as math teachers a lot, like number sense. Like, can you estimate how far away that house is? Like, mm-hmm. so make it a game on the trip. Like, you know, do you think that that's 4 miles away or 300 feet away? You know, if there's a sign way up ahead or something like that, but also filling up cups of water. Like,
okay,
do you get a big bowl? How many cups of water are going to fit into that bowl? Do you think it's 10? Do you think it's 15?
Yeah.
You know, like just little fun things like that. I mean, put some food coloring in the water and watch it all mix together. Yeah, it might be a fun summer thing, and, you know, have them run a relay while they do it. Like, I mean, wear them out at the same time.
You know, it's, yeah, there's so many things we can do with our kids. Thanks for sharing some of those, Danielle. And we'll make sure to post some links in our program notes afterwards so you can have access to some of these ideas and articles. One thing I want to kind of dig into a little bit was this idea about language and what we as moms or female caregivers and sometimes even other caregivers can project on our children through our own language and our own identities around math and what that does to who they feel like they are or are not around math and science and STEM. I would say, I have the privilege of talking to a lot of parents and caregivers every week. And you know, about half of those conversations really have to do with kids and math and struggles. And what normally comes out of a caregiver's mouth is, I know they probably got this from me. I'm so horrible at math. Like, I am just the worst. I can't help them. And you know, I think there's so much there that we can, that our kids can pick up on and start thinking about within their own identities. So how can we be more cognizant of the language that we use, knowing that there might always be some younger ears listening? I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Danielle.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I hear the same thing. And having the wonderful privilege of working for Department of Defense schools, I will never forget a moment when I had a parent come up and hug me in the middle of, this was when I lived over in Germany, in the commissary, which is like the grocery store on base, hug me. I never met this person. And I'm like, okay, why is this man coming up to me and hugging me? It was one of my students' fathers who had come home from fighting the war in Iraq. And he was like, thank you for letting me be able to talk to my daughter again and about algebra.
Wow.
I just burst into tears. The young girl burst into tears. The dad was just so elated, because that's the thing. Like, in those middle and high school years, you know, our children get a little, I don't know what the best word is, monstery sometimes. Like, they kind
edgy.
Of, Yeah, they evolve prickly. Into these. Yep. And so sometimes what we put on them is just, it doesn't make sense to them because they are so hormonal and their brains are still developing. And so they may just take it on because they're trying to find a way to connect to you. They're trying to find a way to relate. Like children are trying to find a way to relate to the parents. And so it's like, well, if I feel the same way about math as they do, then, you know, they'll understand me more. So I think our language that we have to use just has to be like, oh, can you just, can you show me what you're working on? Can you help? Like, let me just see what it is. Can you explain it to me? Mm-hmm. Or what was like the hardest thing that you had to learn? What was the easiest thing you learned this week? But I will say for parents, reach out to your teacher, the kid's teacher, and just say, hey, can you show me how to do this? I've sat down with so many parents and walked them through a lesson. So that way they did have the right questions to be able to ask and the right vocabulary, the right math vocabulary to be able to ask the kid about what it is that they're working on.
Yeah, a lot has changed in the decades from when we were in elementary school or middle school or high school, and then when our kids are having those same experience, the way, you know, we think about math has changed, the way we teach math has changed, and yeah, becoming a little bit more familiar with those changes might help our confidence as parents, which will then help our kids' confidence. Mm-hmm. I love it.
And I think too, just this idea of perfection. And I will say, I've seen a trend more so in young females than
yes.
of the perfectionism in, you know, monster mm-hmm. coming out in them, and that it has to be perfect. And as long as I show, you know, everything so neatly, then I should get it all right. Well, that's about being a good student, and it might not necessarily equate to understanding the concept or the content skill or the knowledge, you know, that is being presented. Our young ladies are sometimes much more organized and really good at being in school than some of our male counterparts, but that could be they're just trying to overcompensate because they might not really understand and they just don't want to admit it. They just don't know how to ask. A lot of times the kids, they just don't know what they don't know. So as a teacher, like I try to ask questions that I know they're going to ask and say like, you know, does who else has that thought? Or I'll purposely make mistakes on a problem and ask them to figure it out. But
well, that's a great parent tip. Model those mistakes.
So,
and just let go of this idea of perfectionism. Yep. Learning's messy.
It's so
life
messy.
Is messy.
Exactly.
Math is messy. Like our papers, and I know some teachers do like things turned in neat, but are we teaching our young girls to turn in their papers neat, or are we teaching them to do some math messily and get their thinking on the paper and really stretch themselves and grow? Like what's important to us, right? Like which one of those things? And maybe it's both. I was thinking too about this idea of language, Danielle, mm-hmm. And how we as parents can frame those dinner conversations or those conversations we have with our kids in ways that will help build their confidence.
Yeah.
This whole idea of like growth mindset. And are we telling our kids that they're smart? Or are we telling our kids that they're hard workers?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about how that might've impacted me in that 10th grade algebra honors class. And, you know, I got to a point where I was like, oh, I'm not smart enough. I didn't make the A. And how could, you know, not to throw shade on mom and dad, but like, how could they have reframed that and been like, all right, you know, you are as smart as you want to be and as you work. So
yeah.
If you're working harder, things will happen for you. And thinking about like, you know, how by having that strength-based kind of growth mindset, we can help kids realize that they just need to try harder. It's not because they're not smart enough.
Exactly. Yep. And I think a lot of times too, it's like, it's just not clicking. There, every child is different. They're coming in with different things that are happening. All those things come into the classroom. All those things come with them into that learning experience. And so that day that they're trying to learn linear equations and how to solve for their slope, that just might not have been their day. But that's okay. That we can find other ways to do that. So it's like that relevancy, you know, and again, like parents reach out to the teacher and say like, okay, what are the main topics this week? And Google's your friend. Just Google it. There's so many great, great videos out there that kind of explain it. So even if you aren't sure as a parent, like, just say, you know, like, so the slope thing, like, what is that? Like, can you explain that to me? Like, I don't remember that in school. So, but I'll say over and over again, math is thinking. It's all about the thinking.
So you're saying that math is thinking.
Yeah, definitely.
I love it. And not to mention too that, you know, our kids had their school and student life disrupted by a pandemic, you know. So even thinking about the language that we use around that and how it's not necessarily learning loss, but there might have been some really large gaps in instructional time that they had. And that's not on our kids. That's not on our young girls. And that's also something that can really ding their confidence and their mathematical identity.
And I mean, sometimes pandemic not here, those gaps happen as well.
A lot of times.
Because
all the time.
Anything can cause those. And so, you know, I know this isn't necessarily what we're talking about, but I would say to parents, like, don't panic.
Right.
It's okay. If you have a concern, write it down. Like, so that way when you can talk to your teacher, like, you're there to be a partner in the child's learning. And so ask those questions, like, is this really important? Things are changing a lot. I just put my daughter, she's starting her freshman year in college this coming August. And I was like, we have to take the ACT. We have to take the ACT, the SAT, you know. And she's like, that's not even a requirement anymore. I was like, oh, really? Okay. Never mind then. So it's just, it is what it is. So, but yeah, again, remember, math is thinking.
Math is thinking. All right, Danielle, any final words for our parent and caregiver listeners?
You've got this. You can do this. And there's so much support out there. And there's so many teachers out there that love your children just as if they are their own. And don't get frustrated. We're here to help. And if you can't find the teacher that's going to help you, then go to the next teacher. Like, we're here. We're here for you.
Or come to the community classroom. We've got a whole team of private teachers that are ready for you. We're here to help.
Room. I love it. Yes.
All right, Danielle, thank you so much for being with us. And Dr. Massey, I hope you have a great rest of your day. All right. Thanks to our listeners. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.